Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. We are here. I'm here with the other two regulars now that we're going to be missing Harley for a month or two. I want to let you know how to email us because I might have forgotten to do that last week. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. We sat on zero emails all week until right after the show. I got three, so now we got three emails. We're going to tackle for you today, and a show that had a decent amount of stuff going on. So I am Kelly Wells. I do the NXT tracker on the Torch. I write about prospects for NXT wrestlers' future. I did one on Adam Cole last week that went up, I think, just last Wednesday or Thursday. I have Justin James with me also.
Hi, I'm Justin James. My Twitter is @Justin_M_James, and I do the weekly NXT recap on the Torch.
And I also have Tom Staup here.
Yep, @TomStaup on Twitter, and I cover the NXT tapings and MLW tapings for the Torch.
You can find me, Kelly Wells, your host, at Spooky Milk on Twitter. Today I was followed by Ashley Massaro, who also followed Tom and Harley. I don't know if she followed you, Justin. But
not that I'm aware of, but now I'm going to have to feel a little stung.
I have to find out. Well,
clearly she's an Adam Cole fan.
I was going to say... I was going to say she obviously listens to the show, but there we go. It's not a confirmed thing, so I don't know if this is actually Ashley Massaro, but at the same time, in 2018, I don't know who pretends to be Ashley Massaro. I think you'd aim a little higher. She was cool, but she was...
You just said she listens to the show.
She was a blip on the radar.
So, you're about to lose a follower on Twitter.
You know what, Ashley? I watched your work in wrestling. I watched you on Survivor because I never miss Survivor. Although during the season, I've got to watch it late because of this show. So I kid, Ashley, because I love. As long as that's you, and if it's not, then hey, let's stop pretending to be Ashley Massaro. Okay, so let's talk about this week's show. I'm going to go ahead and start with our main event, Dakota Kai versus Shayna Baszler. I'm going to go ahead and jump into this myself because, oh my God, you guys, this was Kai and Baszler is literally the best hype for a women's title match that they've done in probably multiple years, and it didn't lead to a takeover match. It's so frustrating to me that this is not the plan for takeover. Kai and Baszler is just so much better with it than anything they could have produced. I know that people are marking for Nikki. We do have an email or two to that effect, but I just thought this feud was just so beautifully organic. But okay, it was a decent match, and we got a big opening for Kai to come back strong after this. Tom, you were there. Tell us what you thought.
Well... let's see, where to begin, because I've got a lot of thoughts on this. Go figure, it's a Shayna match, and I've got a lot of thoughts on it. I guess, watching back the episodes, I was a little let down that they gave away that Nikki was involved in the story ahead of time, because even, Harley so astutely called that this, almost to the letter, was going to happen before the writing was on the wall. And even in the crowd, there was a little bit of buzz of like, we're pretty sure Nikki's going to come out. I mean, we're here for it, but we're pretty sure that we know where this is going. But it was still really, really exciting. And I kind of wish it was left as a surprise rather than having Nikki sort of playing the Yoda to Dakota for a couple of weeks there. I agree that the build is fantastic. And it would be a nice spotlight to get Dakota at that takeover match. There's nothing to say that she doesn't deserve that spotlight. If they felt okay with keeping Nikki off screen, even a few more weeks, because she's been absent for a while. And because going into this, it's really hard for me to say that Nikki's not going to win this takeover match. But there's also that weird thing of like, well, it's Shayna's first takeover defense, so you kind of don't want to call it against her. And if this was going to Baszler-Kai at takeover and then going to Baszler-Cross at the next takeover, it would be that much more of a sure call. Maybe that's not a bad thing, though, to not know. Of course, that's not a bad thing to not know where this match is going.
Right.
I'll toss it back to you so I don't suck all the air out of the room.
And maybe it'll go the other way. Maybe it'll be Baszler Cross and then actually bounce back to Baszler Kai. And they could still do that. And I think this could go a lot of ways. I feel like Nikki being off TV for so long is maybe to do those tweaks to move up. So I'm not writing off her not winning this match and then moving up before Shayna does. Obviously, Shayna's got to go up sooner than later. We all kind of think maybe they could do this horsewomen thing at Survivor Series if they wanted. They got to make some hay with the couple that aren't on TV yet. But I think we all think that maybe could happen. I don't know. There are tweaks to Nikki here. I don't know if I like the act as much outside of Sanity as with Sanity, but I don't know. They've got to try because I think Nikki is really getting some of the best reactions they've got in a while. I'm going to quick do our email from Johnny Lang here, who I think has not emailed us before, or at least isn't one of the regulars. Finally, for what felt like years of waiting, we got the Nikki Cross angle we've been waiting for. My household popped huge for that segment. It was way more than we expected or even hoped for. So excited for the Nikki / Baszler feud that is to come. Have a great show, guys. All right. No questions there, but we will take your advice and we'll have a great show. Thanks, man. So, Justin, what did you think of this entire saga?
I mean, I think what we really were hoping to see was Dakota Kai suddenly like find her spark and unleash the power within or something along those lines. Something kind of anime-ish, you know, because sure. She's kind of anime-y. I think that's what we'd really hoped for, but we also knew that Nikki Cross was going to be heavily involved in some way. I thought maybe Nikki Cross would be helping Kai find her spark here, you know, showing Kai how to unleash her sanity or something. And I thought we'd be getting something more along those lines. I knew that Kai was getting crushed here. I loved the way that happened. I loved Baszler doing the Baszler stomp to the ankle instead of the arm, showing that she's versatile and not a one-trick pony. I thought the match itself was very well executed. And I think the Nikki Cross, I mean, Nikki Cross being the number one contender makes a lot of sense. Nikki Cross in terms of, you know, on the roster, who would I believe could beat Shayna Baszler? Nikki Cross is the only one except for maybe Bianca Belair. Nikki Cross has the star power where if we're going to take the title off Baszler and put it on Cross or set up a strong contender to the title, Nikki Cross is the best choice. So I like where this is going, other than Dakota Kai not finding her spark and beating up Shayna Baszler.
Dakota will get her groove back. She will. Go ahead.
Yeah, then. And she at least got that babyface comeback, which was looking pretty good. And I loved the finish, how she went for that. I think on Twitter she's colloquially calling it the Kai Ropractor, but I'm not sure if that's official.
She does a lot.
I don't know, because
puns.
I haven't seen.
She does a ton.
I haven't
puns
seen her deliver great. Finishing moves, so I don't know if she has one. Sorry.
She's hit it on Vanessa Bourne a couple times.
Oh, that doesn't
maybe.
Count. Vanessa, okay. Vanessa Bourne, I think would go down for a I don't know, a DDT or an Enziguri or something. Come on,
yeah.
Everybody's being Bourne.
One thing about Kai, maybe you guys have noticed as well. I think she's been putting on some muscle mass lately. You know, a year ago around this time, she looked kind of like a stick, but not that she has to bulk up. She was fine, but she's been looking particularly fit.
Yeah, when that happens, it always happens so slowly that I don't notice, and then I'll go back and I'll watch something that they were on early, and I could, I'm sure, pop on that first Mae Young Classic. And
it, I don't know. I think EC3 looks like 20 pounds heavier than he, like 20 pounds more jacked than he did last time we saw him.
Yeah, and it could be maybe that's the way they're going. I mean, some of them have stayed skinny up there. Sasha is still stick thin. She couldn't go through the table at Hell in the Cell. That was difficult to watch. But yeah, they made it through. But yeah, it seems like maybe she is. So that was that, and I think that answered that question. Everything else that got in motion for Chicago, I think we all definitely knew was happening. But this one, there was a tiny bit of question of which way they'd go. But they went the semi-obvious route, given that Nikki had been back on TV. So
yeah, some pretty cool trivia, if I can use my signature move of cutting you off as you're trying to transition.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Do it.
I will just mention that this was the main event of the first night of the two-night tapings that they did, which was pretty cool that they put it in that slot. And it was Baszler's first match at Full Sail since the Mae Young Classic. Everywhere else she's wrestled has been at a different location. And as the show tonight was going off the air, they cut early. What ended up happening was Nikki actually put the title down and Shayna went to retrieve it. Actually, as this was happening, a fan shouted, "You suck," at her, and she turned around and glared at the crowd like she was trying to heat seek who the heck said that to her before she stormed away. Although personally, I'm glad that they cut it before that, just because I like this angle better with Nikki cavorting with the title.
Right. Wow, that's kind of funny. I would not want to be stared down by Shayna Baszler. She would destroy me, as would they all, but Shayna would especially destroy me. Okay, so let's...
I think you could at least take, Dakota Kai.
Let's not talk any more about that. So let's... The next match we're going to talk about is... Let's go to Ricochet and Chris Dijak. These were all the other matches were... I think foregone conclusions. If you watch a lot of indies and have seen Donovan Dijak, maybe you thought he had a chance, and certainly the match allowed him to look good. Lots of fun in this very short match, leading to, as we assumed, the angle with Velveteen Dream. These guys will go in Chicago, and it will be glorious, and this post-match stuff I thought was great fun as well. Justin, we're going to start with you on this one.
Ooh, this was a fun match. We had two of these little three-minute matches tonight that were both just really great for both people in the ring. Chris Dijak just really impressed me. I love that gut-wrench suplex that Ricochet hit on him, because Dijak is not a small guy. And when you see that, you say, you know what, I can believe that Ricochet could go one-on-one with Lars Sullivan. Right, so that seeing that move was a very important setup, I think, for Ricochet down the line as somebody who's on the smaller end of the size spectrum. And then, of course, the post match was just fire.
Yeah, got that
flip. Velveteen Dream. There's something about Velveteen Dream. I don't know if it's the writing. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if he just has that Kevin Costner ability to pick the perfect role in the perfect movie every time.
Kevin Costner.
But yeah, Kevin Costner is not a great actor, but he managed to get a string of just totally amazing movies that were amazing vehicles for him, and then he botched it all with Waterworld.
Yeah.
But he did that thing, but you know, I don't know what it is about Dream, but it's like, you know, the Aleister Black feud. Like from the get go. Hot, this Ricochet thing from the beginning, hot, and it gets hotter and hotter. His interactions with Ricochet, like, you know me, you know I don't have the opportunity to really consume the non-WWE content out there. And Ricochet came to NXT with a lot of, you know, kind of internet baggage of, oh, he does these moves that look fancy but don't accomplish anything, and his promos aren't that hot, he's got charisma but it's not really his promos. Whatever weaknesses people said Ricochet had, I have not seen them. When he does these fancy moves, they always feel like they have a purpose, right? You know, he distracts the opponent with the somersault and then lands a cool drop kick. That makes sense. You know, his microphone skills are, you know, maybe the way he delivers his lines isn't perfect in every line, but the charisma and the way he's, you know, you can tell he's really buying into this. And I'm just like with this thing, I just want to see more and more and more. I love this. I love this feud.
Yeah, and he's fairly natural on the mic, or at least he's getting there. There's still work to be done, obviously. That's why he's down there. But that's I think he's much more natural on the mic than somebody like EC3, who sounds very, very rehearsed, even though I like what EC3 is saying on the mic when he does get mic time. But yeah, this was as much as you could pack into a few-minute match, and a really, really fun setup with that visual of the flip out, and Velveteen couldn't have sold it any better than he did. I love the facial expressions where he put over Ricochet after the match.
It could have been so comical. Like, you could have just laughed at him, but the way he did it is it wasn't comical. Yep. It was serious.
He was committed. He was committed. Yep. It was beautiful.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week. With the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now, get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, this was quite a bit briefer than the dark main event that these two had a couple months ago. I believe it was Ricochet's first taping, but it was still very good. I would say that for the people involved, this was a fairly pitch perfect segment. And yes, I've been very critical of Ricochet, but when he does have segments like this where he doesn't do anything that doesn't have a consequence and is only there for the sake of looking showy, I'm definitely a fan. He's slowly but very, very surely turning me around. And every time he does that handstand springboard, whatever Superman pose thing it is that he does, he knocks himself down a few notches. But anyway, there's my obligatory reference to that every time I talk about him. But I very, very much like this. I liked Mauro Ranallo referring to Chris Dijak as the Tower. I'm not sure if that's a nickname that has followed him, but this is the first time I've heard it. I thought it was apt. Very much looking forward to seeing more from him. And very little to add, just other than I also thought it was another excellent promo segment involving Velveteen Dream. And he just, it's something that I enjoy even more on TV than I do live, because you get the close-ups and you get to see the nuance in his facial expressions and when he licks his lips and when he pouts and when he raises his eyebrow, and he's just, he hits everything so perfectly. I guess my only little trivia about this is that this was presented out of order, understandably. I expected them to, on this two nights in a row tapings that they did, I expected them to shuffle some things around just for the logistics of not overworking the talent. But this was the fifth match that was filmed on the second night. I'm referring back to my own reports on the Torch to remind myself of that, but I can also tell based on the t-shirts that people are wearing in the crowd. I'm like, oh, everybody had a costume change between matches.
Okay, yeah. I was actually thinking about that and asking about that. And you had talked about the Ricochet-Dijak match, so I had a note. I was going to ask you, is this what you thought was the dark match? I didn't realize that was a different taping altogether.
I would like to say that this match was kind of like the highlights of that, but they really had a lot of time to work with when they did their dark main event. They did a lot more, and it was all very impressive.
Great.
That was good to know.
Go ahead.
Now, something I noticed in this match too, Harley, was that Mauro gave not
Harley's
one but two
not
Mamma
here,
Mia's.
But,
I mean, I'm sorry, Kelly.
He's here in spirit. We like Harley.
Yeah. Callie, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Harley's a good cat.
Moro gave you not one but two Mamma Mias tonight.
He did. Yes. Oh, he screamed Mamma Mia today.
Yeah. Yeah, he delivered a double Mamma Mia. Now I see myself, Kelly's just going to be, it's going to be like the dog when a thunderstorm comes in.
Have I mentioned that I'm all about the Mamma Mia? Have I?
Yeah, a few times.
Well, I guess, yes, I do like it. I do. I just like his enthusiasm in general. I mean, even if you took out that that comment entirely, I just absolutely love the enthusiasm of a essentially babyface announcer. Like, he doesn't... I'm
pretty sure you hated Mamma Mia.
Me? No, yeah. Absolutely not. No, you are thinking of... You might be thinking of Harley, actually. Because I want to say someone did, but it is not me who hates the Mamma Mia.
Well, anybody's got a problem with Moro can take it up with me. I like the guy.
Yep. Me too. Yeah, one of the most fan-friendly wrestling personalities of all time, too. If you haven't talked to him on Twitter, do it, because he'll respond. It's what he does. So, all right, let's go to Fabian Aichner versus EC3. Fabian Aichner may be one of the best talents on the roster to never win a match ever. Against EC3, and then we got the very weird booking of Johnny Gargano coming out and announcing a match that already had been announced on the show 20 minutes earlier, and EC3 not being super happy about this, and I assume that means that this is Johnny's next feud. Might as well get it. I like Johnny and Ciampa working with somebody who isn't each other. I like a little bit of that because we're going to have feuds for these guys down the road. But a very weird thing.
They've been working with Candice LeRae.
That's true. This wasn't a great look for Johnny. It's like Johnny, who's their most popular guy, comes out and he interrupts a match that he's not involved in, which is a heelish thing to do, and announces something that we've already heard is announced 20 minutes earlier. It just looks stupid on top of it because we already knew about it. Maybe you guys weren't as bugged by it as I was, but I was just shaking my head like, what is this booking? Justin, go ahead.
Gargano really hasn't come off as the sharpest knife in the drawer of this whole thing.
Well, I guess that's true. They're making him more emotional than he is intelligent, which is fine.
I'll put it this way. I know if I talk something over with my wife long and hard and then went to tell the world about it and then changed my mind because a couple hundred random strangers were saying yes, yes, yes at me, I'm pretty sure that would be the short path to divorce court.
Right.
You know, this is a couple that has to share a neck brace. But, yeah, I think Gargano, it did come off a bit heelish here, even though EC3 is – and EC3 is supposed to be is a popular wrestler, despite his character being a heel. And so, yeah, I do feel that this was a bit heelish. And the distraction from Gargano almost cost, you know, EC3 a match – you know, easy through the match against a guy who's never won a match.
Right.
So, you know, maybe Gargano
kind of works heel. So who are these characters? I don't even know.
Does Aichner, like, Aichner is booked as the heel, but he wrestles super mega babyface. And like, he's one of these guys, like, every time he does his entrance, people boo him. And halfway through the match, they start cheering him.
Yeah, I think people are forgetting because he's not been a guy who wins on TV, and he comes out looking a little bit grizzled and angry, and then he's so awesome in the ring. And
yeah,
he
starts pulling out like this combination Neville and, I don't know, Triple H moveset.
Yeah, he's definitely a different kind of guy. He's not that big. He was small enough to be in the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't be now, but he was then. He's a really, really, I think, interesting and special talent. And I hope that there's something for him here before long. And they must think so, because they're giving him plenty of minutes.
Yeah. No, they're giving him a 2.5-minute loss every other month, but I mean, every time he comes out, like in his 60 seconds of offense, I say to myself, when's this guy going to pick up a win? When's he going to get his push? I can't wait. He's like Oney Larkin.
Right. Which is only just now maybe kind of happening.
2 years later.
You're right.
Just, as a consolation prize for his tag team partner getting a contract.
Tom, you can go ahead and take away the EC3 and Fabian. Yeah,
well, obviously I completely agree about Aichner and his big spot in this match. Watching from opposite hard cam, the low angle that they showed on TV, it still looked impressive, but didn't quite do it justice. It looked like that guy was going to go through the lane. It was startling. EC3, I think, is in – this is not really the comparison I want to make, but bear with me here. I think he's in the Velveteen Dream position of they want him to be a heel, but he's just going to be super popular the first couple times he shows up, whereas like Velveteen Dream very recently became so popular that they couldn't really present him as a heel because it just wasn't going to work with the crowd. And they found a slower way with this Ricochet feud to flip that back, in my opinion, rather effectively. So EC3, you know, is positioned against... Well, no, he was wrestling Raul Mendoza recently, too. Well, anyway, I feel like that's kind of where he's at, where they're just like, all right, he's the de facto babyface just because of how people are reacting to him right now. And over time, we'll see him slide into a more definitive heel role. Now, subjectively, I loved Johnny's interruption because watching live, or, you know, watching at the taping, rather, we didn't have that announcement yet.
You didn't know about the announcement. Street fight, right.
Right. And at the top of this episode, I was like, well, they messed that up. Because since EC3's match had happened, I had the, you know, foreknowledge that Johnny's announcement was going to occur. And I have no idea why they just gave that away. You could argue that, well, I will say that EC3 is probably the flavor du jour with the NXT crowd right now. He gets the loudest pops out of anybody. And, you know, you see the fans passing around the signs and everything. He's the thing that has everybody really excited right now. Completely subjectively, I don't really get it. The guy looks like a Greek god, but there's almost nothing else about him that does it for me. So I'm going to need to be won over. So with all that in mind, I was a little bit tickled that that was the match that Johnny interrupted, even though an argument could be easily made that that was so not the match that should have been interrupted. It'll be interesting if that leads to something between them post takeover, preferably with the peripheral to that being Ciampa moving up to title contention against Black. I thought it was interesting. I can't remember the last time, if there even was the last time, that a match was announced in this fashion. And while later on I'll mention that I don't like a challenger or a competitor saying that they have this match from the like speaking on behalf of the authority figure, in this case, since he was holding the signed contract, that was okay with me.
Yep. All right. So I have another email that came in after I said we had three emails. We got four. Chris Fielder, one of our favorites, he emailed us. Hey, guys, like always, I love the show and listen every week. It sucks. Harley will be gone for a while. I've grown to love his stats every week. Oh, us too. We're going to miss those. I've got two things this week. First off, EC3. Does anyone else think he's trying way too hard to impress the fans in NXT? To be honest, I really didn't like him in TNA/Impact, but he seemed to have a swagger about him that seems forced in NXT. Wow, this is like the stuff I was just saying. I don't know if it's the big fish, little pond theory or what it's been, but more and more noticeable to me anyway. Second, Chris Dijak is the freaking man. I was totally impressed by him tonight, and I have no clue why NXT has been keeping him off of television tapings. He has the look, the size, and the moveset to be a big-time player. What do you guys think? As always, thanks for everything. Chris Fielder, baby, truth or consequences, New Mexico. I will say about Chris Dijak, I assume, because he was no great shakes on the mic. I know a little bit of Chris Dijak. As Donovan Dijak, I've got a tiny bit of history, seeing a couple of his matches, and I am good friends with a guy who goes to a lot of shows, a lot of indie shows, and has seen Dijak over and over and over, and gushes about him every time. I assume that this is because a 6'8 guy who looks like Dijak does is not somebody they want to screw up. They do not want to screw him up. So that's why I don't think he's been on TV, because I don't think they want him in a position to lose a ton of matches. And even in this match that he lost in a short amount of time, I don't think they wanted him to look bad. So I'm with you. I want to see more of Dijak, but I've got to assume that this is the reason that he has not been on TV.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Any of you guys have any other comment on that for Chris Fielder?
Took the words out of my mouth regarding Dijak. And EC3, I guess I already spoke my piece about him. I will say that a positive is that I do see him staying late after the tapings when he totally doesn't have to go outside and greet fans and take pictures with them. And that always goes a long way with me. But yeah, as far as the character presentation, it seems rigid. It seems maybe a little square peg round hole for NXT. We'll see. I'm gonna have to force myself to be along for the ride on it, because I like to be optimistic, but right now I'm not very high on EC3 personally.
Now, see, I remember him back in the Derek Bateman days. He was always a tryhard. He always was a tryhard. It's just that the Derek Bateman character just happened to be built around that, and it worked. And the EC3 character does not work with the tryhard. And I think that's just who he is as a person, right? You know, you look at him, you know, he goes on Facebook and he's pushing this NX3 thing very hard. Mm. And you go on Twitter, he's pushing this NX3 thing very hard. And you know what? If he was a red meat baby face character, or maybe somebody like Ricochet, right, whose character is supposed to be, you know, a little cocky, but babyface, he would be killing it. But his character is not supposed to be this red meat baby face or Ricochet, cocky and can back it up babyface. He's supposed to be kind of heelish. And so it's like, maybe you don't need to be doing this. Dijak just really impressed me. I mean, he's got like the build of Tino Sabatelli, but wrestles like, you know, anyone Dolph Ziggler.
Else? Right. Yeah. It's, I know. It's, it was fun to see, finally, and I can't wait for more. I just hope that they don't put him in that. I know that there's got to be guys who get on TV and lose a lot, but I don't want him to lose like Oney Lorcan or like Eichner. I don't want Eichner to lose like Eichner, but somebody's got to.
I like Eichner.
Yeah. So
that we should get buttons done up like the Eisenhower campaign.
I like Ike.
Buttons.
Yep.
I like Ike. Yep. Yeah, I like Ike, but spelled A-I-C-H. I like Ike.
Yeah. Oh, I'm down.
Ike, right, if you're listening, do it.
Yeah, we'll be
Jinx,
the first in line. We'll be the first in line to buy. I got a question. I've got an email from Patrick Alog here. Patrick, if you are listening, go ahead and tell me how to say your name, because I'm not 100% on this. Guys, first of all, this is the first time in about 4 months that I've watched NXT at its actual time. I've been watching Survivor, one of the only shows that's not wrestling or sports I watch. Are you just as confused as I am about Gargano interrupting EC3? I'm hoping there's a payoff with Gargano and EC3. Also, ever since I saw Nikki Cross, I've wondered if she ever goes to the main roster, they'll do a storyline to refine her, just like Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. I remember seeing her in a kayfabe interview, and she was really sweet and charming. Oh, and it's been great to not see Kona Reeves the last 2 weeks. Also, I'm planning to go to Chicago for NXT TakeOver, and I'm excited how the card is developing. Enjoy the show, and keep up the great work, Patrick Green Bay. I love that he called out a state
My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady.
Well, Velveteen Dream's quoted that movie twice now.
That, yep. You know, if it was the Attitude Era, I would have zero trouble believing that that's what they were going to do with this character. They haven't gone real weird like that in a while. Not that going weird like that is a terrible thing all the time, but that's the kind of thing you do when a character loses steam, and not just because you feel like it. That would be fun, and I know what he's saying because I remember Nikki when she was Nikki Glencross being a very sort of milquetoast babyface, but one that you liked, or at least that I liked. I don't know. She was somebody I noticed.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting idea, and I think could be really funny if you gave the proper amount of time to it. And who do you pair her up with? Somebody like Bailey, who's more, I don't know, Bailey's a little gone off the deep end now, but
Lacey Evans, come on.
Oh God, that would be
Yeah, you have Lacey Evans trying to dress her up like a southern, like a proper southern woman with the hat and, you know, the frilly garbage, and have her sipping lemonade and go to the book club.
Right.
Oh, and she's just sitting there like foaming at the mouth at the book club. And I don't know, she rips the scones apart and throws them across the room and starts babbling.
Right. That could actually be fun. Tom, comment on that. And if you want, go ahead into the little Lacey promo we had and the hype for Kyrie next week. Is that a match you saw? Is that from this taping as well?
Yes. Regarding Nikki, I agree that's a fantastic idea, although I would not want to see it until indeed she's more merged into traffic and cooled down a bit, which I would not anticipate. I mean, who knows what's going to happen on a transition to the main roster, but as you noted earlier in the show, she's been tweaked a little bit, just a little bit, and it, from what I'm seeing, those tweaks are that she's that much more manic to the point where sitting there in those bleachers, I didn't really know what she was trying to accomplish when she kept on pointing back and forth and pointing at the title and trying to get Dakota's attention. I'm like, I got it the first time that you want a match, but why are you still, what's happening? It came across better on TV, but, you know, fun segment either way. Regarding Lacey and Kyrie, Lacey cut a different backstage promo for the live crowd, and she said, well, you know, our little pirate has gone to, she probably called her something more derisive than that, but our little pirate has gone to William Regal and requested a rubber match because she has to be a sore loser. So I have to go out in front of you dirty Full Sail fans one more time. And I will, because I'm a classy lady. Yes, I have seen this match. And once we see it on TV, the trifecta of Lacey matches that were all done in one night will be complete. I gushed about it last time I was on, but Lacey was, in my opinion, the MVP of that taping. She had three very good matches in one night, and I'm looking forward to talking about this upcoming one.
Tom, it's a statement I'd never thought I'd hear you say.
Was Regal on these tapings? Was he there?
I'm very curious as to whether this is either a conscious effort to keep authority figures off of NXT TV, or if maybe he was over in the UK scouting Progress and Evolve for the upcoming tournament. He's been AWOL.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. And when you're not there for two nights, that's not a big deal, except for the fact that those two nights set up like 6 weeks of TV, or whatever it is.
And leading into TakeOver.
Yeah, right. And I guess you're always leading kind of into TakeOver. You're never that far away. But, you know, two or four. Yeah, this was a lot of nights to miss. So, that's why I was going to ask, because I thought it was okay that Sullivan said that he had a match. But we all knew it was coming, so it was going to be a clunker anyway. But it was odd the way that was delivered, and we'll get to that. And you know what? We'll get to it now. Let's go ahead and talk about Sullivan Black at the top of the show, talking about Regal. I don't know that there's anything really to say about this. This was a very paint-by-numbers sort of guy who has been winning gets his title match. And given the fact that Sullivan was originally going to be the contender that WrestleMania weekend. I think that, I don't know, I wouldn't be shocked if he won this, but I don't know how much steam there is towards this feud or how much I'm looking forward to it in comparison to other NXT title matches. Guys, get me a little more excited. Tom, go ahead.
I can't really help you there, because even though we predicted this was the direction they were going, and honestly, considering the exact juncture that we're at, I'm in support of this, giving presumably giving Alistair a speed bump, a giant speed bump to go over. You know, the kind of the typical babyface wins at a big event, and then their first challenger ends up being this giant monster of a person. It's like, oh my gosh, how they're not going to hold on to their title for that long. Regarding the segment, ideally, I personally would prefer if Aleister Black would just remain silent. But if he has to cut promos, I really wish that he wouldn't say things like, "It's been a trip, man."
Yeah, it's like CJ Parker is yeah, giving the promo.
It reminded me of him smiling, which they keep replaying over and over again. It just doesn't seem like it's in character, although maybe they're trying to add more layers to him, and it's not really clicking with me personally. But then the only other thing he really said was his catchphrase, "Fade to Black." And even Lars came out and said it again for him. It just, you know, there was more verbosity than that, but it gets to a point where the main roster's fashion of just speaking in catchphrases and
the
not really saying anything.
Catchphrasing is getting awful. I hate it. Everyone's doing it at the end of their comments. They had to wedge it in with Lacey in what otherwise was, I thought, a simple, effective promo. And she had to say the right, the woman's right. And I'm just shaking my head. Like, you didn't get there organically. It's like, stop it. It's clearly a mandate because it's going on all over the company, but it's just not important enough. Like, these things don't have to be on our lips for the show to work. The catchphrasing is really frustrating.
Yeah, maybe I'm weird, but I don't think so. I gravitate much more towards things that I feel like I'm personally involved in, or things that I feel like I've discovered. And when there's something that I think is cool that then gets repeated over and over and over again, I'll be like, it's not really, I don't identify with it anymore. So I'm not going to buy the t-shirt. But regarding the rest of the segment, I mean, Lars catching the roundhouse kick was a nice touch, I thought. And sells me more on his being a fearsome competitor for Black than hitting his signature move. I thought it was also a cool visual. But I mean, yeah, at this point, I'm not super hyped for the takeover match itself.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
All right. I don't know. Is there, Justin, anything to add there for the hype on that or whatever they're doing?
All right. So we all know, no secret here, I'm a big fan of Lars Sullivan, but this promo really managed, and we also know I'm a big fan of Aleister Black. This promo managed to not only dramatically cool me off on Aleister Black, but also Lars Sullivan. I don't know how. Like Lars Sullivan had this cool thing going on where he was a monster, but he was well spoken. And while he didn't, you know, speak in gibberish here, he didn't use any big words. He didn't come off as smart like he usually does. He just came off as somebody who shouts really loud and can speak adequate English. And it didn't impress me. And Aleister Black, so much of his mystique has been lost in the last, you know, since he's become champion. He truly is a less is more, not because he cuts a bad promo. It's because his character has no business cutting promos. That's not his character. His character's not a promo cutting guy. And the more I hear him talk, the more the mystery of Aleister Black is gone, the more the shine is off. I'm just so annoyed and disappointed with how much they give the mic to him. And again, it's not because he stinks, and it's not because he cuts a bad promo personally. It's because his character should not be cutting promos.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think they got a little greedy. He was talking the right amount for quite a while, and
as in nothing,
right? And then he did, and then I think doing something like enjoy the infamy Velveteen Dream, you can't beat that for that to be all he says. That's absolute dynamite. And I don't know, maybe they can always go back. It's not like they can't go back to that when it gets to the main roster. Certainly they got a lot of other guys who can fill the time with promos. But I think they're afraid of a champion who doesn't cut a lot of promos.
They had Asuka.
I don't think they had like a year and a half
of people who didn't even speak English well as champions, and everybody was okay with it. Nobody was saying like, oh man, that Asuka would be great if only she spoke better English and cut more promos. Nobody cared. Nobody dumped on a Nakamura reign because of his English.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, guys. I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next thing. I did write down that Fozzy is the song for the next takeover. I thought
Are they our first repeat band?
They might be. All the others sound the same to me, so I'm not entirely sure. Because
a year ago they had Judas as an NXT song.
It was not that long ago. I was just a little – I raised my eyebrow because Jericho's actually – working a New Japan feud right now, so that was very odd for me to see. So I see him hyped on New Japan, and then here he is on WWE. But I feel like he's kind of got enough equity with all these companies that they like him enough that he gets away with it. So, you know, they'll give him a little plug. Why not? The only other things I have are War Raiders versus George Hickson and Cody Vincent. I would venture to guess you guys don't have much to say on that. And then Bianca Belair got one of those mini documentaries that I thought was really expertly done, where it worked in enough of you getting into her story, but then she stayed cocky about it. Like, I'm self-made, and I love what she did here. I love everything about her. She's so good. But yeah, this was good stuff, showing how truly talented she is. That she is a truly special human specimen. Really cool stuff here. I enjoyed it anyway. Tom, what'd you think of this?
Well, I already forgot the War Raiders match had happened by the time we're recording this right now. But I thought that they towed that line with the Bel Air mini documentary perfectly, because they're showing all of this incredibly impressive, like almost jaw-dropping athletic achievements that she's accrued in such a short lifespan so far. And yet I think there was even a quote, unless I misheard her, where they're showing all of these incredible achievements and how hard she has to be working for them. And she just goes, you know, I was just doing the bare minimum because that's all I have to do. I'm so good that all I have to do is the bare minimum to get all of this. And it was perfect. So probably not one of the very, very best that they've done. But for what they wanted to say for the character, I thought it was great. And, you know, as if I needed to be that much more excited about Bianca Belair, here we are. It was good stuff.
I think they did more with her than they managed to get done with Roddy and his or TM61. And I didn't hear them mention a part two coming up, but I was very happy with what we got. I thought that, you know, she did a good job, and I loved, you know, her saying stuff like, you know, yeah, I didn't really try, and yet there I was. But to me, the most impressive thing though that came out of it was, and it prompted me to go to Wikipedia and get some confirmation, she never stepped foot in a wrestling ring until April 2016.
That's crazy.
And this isn't somebody who worked her way out, because she said, oh, I didn't do the indies, I didn't do Japan. I was like, maybe she's just saying that for the sake of the promo, right? And I pull up Wikipedia, and it's like, she got notice, and Mark Henry said, you know, brought her some notice after seeing one of her CrossFit videos. She did a tryout, and her contract was April 2016.
That's crazy.
And you look at this, you know, she's been wrestling for 2 years, and I'll classify her as one of the top five wrestlers. Maybe not necessarily top five in terms of in-ring talent, which is a, you know, that's a tough one considering you've got, you know, guys like, you know, folks like, Gargano and Ciampa in there already. But in terms of total package, I'll put her in top five easily.
Yeah, I don't think that I'd argue with you at all. She is a natural, probably at just about everything she's ever done that has an athletic element. And then, unlike most athletes, she actually has a natural charisma. I mean, a lot of athletes are very stiff and wooden and cannot sell themselves. Like, you know how it is when athletes are on commercials and you laugh because of how terrible they are.
And that's like the plot line to Rocky too.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I'm a little punchy.
And you can, and she does it, and she just looks absolutely at home in everything she does.
Yeah, she's got that. There's certain people who I would call natural athletes, where they have such a mastery over their body after, you know, combination of genetics and experience and training, where you can show them something once and they can just repeat it.
Yep.
Instantly. And obviously, Belair has that ability. If you look at the number of sports she's played, if you look at the way she wrestles in the ring, she is, you know, fish to water. You know.
Yep.
And then, of course, kudos to the Performance Center for turning somebody who's never wrestled in her life in less than 2 years. She's amazing.
Well, there you go. And I think that's something that we've seen on the main roster as something that they really like to invest in, which makes her kind of a safer investment for her fans. You feel that much more like, okay, she's probably not going anywhere because she is homegrown. And, you know, even though it can be a rocky road sometimes, WWE right now is very stubbornly pushing a lot of homegrown people, almost as if to put over their Performance Center system.
Yeah, they can remind people what they've got there, and that's very much a Vince mentality. I think we are all kind of aware that he's got to, like, prove that his stuff works. And if that's not the reason, that's not the reason. But I don't think anyone's surprised by that. Well,
the other thing too, though, with her is that she has a gimmick, and I hesitate to even call it a gimmick, that translates extraordinarily well to the main roster. You don't need to give her a background. You don't need to give her anything. You just need to give her a couple minutes of mic time every now and then, and you know exactly who she is.
Yep. A lot of gimmicks, but she has an actual character, and the character shines through in and out of the ring, not just one or the other.
It's why I keep comparing her to Sasha.
And Sasha wasn't as much of a natural. She was certainly not.
Oh, no, she wasn't.
Certainly not a natural on the mic, Sasha. But like Bianca has kind of shown that she is. But they've got that similar sort of swagger now. And for me, right now, the Bianca character works better because they just position her kind of as an obvious heel, whereas Sasha is a face who often, really often, acts heelish. So I don't know. I love it. I just, for me, the big question here again is, what does the Belair character do if Shayna is going to hold on to that title for a while? Because I don't think they're going to work towards Shayna Bianca. I think that match could be good, but character wise, I don't think it would make a ton of sense right now. So you've got to kind of do these stop gaps, like keep her fresh in people's heads because her work deserves it. But what do you do with her? So
if they keep her on the back, well, not she's not even on the back burner. But if they keep her at the level she's at for long enough, you know, she could still be. She won't be old hat by the time that maybe the NXT women's division has cycled through again, and we have people like Tainara Conchi or Rhea Ripley or whoever might win the upcoming Mae Young Classic in the mix, or Kyrie positioned a bit more highly. and we've gone this long gushing about Bianca Belair without even mentioning what's probably the highest selling point in her braid. All it takes, the first time you see her, you hear that braid smack against somebody's torso one time and you're sold.
Yep. That worked for me quick in the tournament. I was all about it. Yep.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So, Bianca, we like her. We've said that before, but we will continue to say it for as long as that she is on NXT TV. So, we have one more email to cover. It's from Brian Alston. Brian from Phoenix, senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. Hello, friends. Number one, I'll miss Harley's contribution to the show. I'm not an ROH guy, so not listening to Talking Honor. Hopefully he'll be back for TakeOver Chicago. I'm going to go ahead and jump in here and say hopefully he will. I'm actually not going to be able to do TakeOver Chicago. My wife got us tickets for a music festival that day. She got them months ago, and I will be at that. So that one I'm going to miss, which really bums me out, but I'll see it the next day, and I'll talk about it on Wednesday.
And I'll jump in real quick and say that I am also not much of an ROH guy, though Harley has gotten me to watch it a couple times recently. But I personally would recommend Talking Honor because he and Emily Fear do a fantastic job analyzing the show and keeping me up to date with it, even if I'm not watching. And they're also now doing Elite Repeat, talking about being the Elite starting from episode one with a wrestler in training named Tempest. And that's also been pretty good so far, two episodes in. So even if you're not watching the product, I would recommend trying to squeeze it into the schedule, although I understand it's a lot of content.
Yeah, and I am watching ROH. He got me into it. It's not hard to convince me to watch wrestling. It's really not. So even though I'm giving all my time to the Best of the Super Juniors right now, an hour or two or three every night until this tournament's over, he's got me back into it. So,
you know,
go ahead.
Greg Parks was able to convince me to watch an episode of Impact Wrestling last week to prepare for an appearance on his show. So I'm just saying, Harley.
Well, at least that happened.
You book me, and I will do my homework for you, Harley. I promise. I'll watch an episode of ROH. I don't care how I have to make that happen. If I have to drive to a stranger's house where they get Sinclair, I'll make sure it happens. And Harley, if you're listening, if you want to convince me to watch ROH, just book me.
Sundays at 10, chargetv.com. And yeah, the Impact thing, at least that happened after Tessa Blanchard got signed, because even I'm starting to pay a little bit of attention now that she's showing up every other week.
Yeah, if you want me on a show, just call me, because I've subscribed to everything. I have Honor Club. I have New Japan. I have WWE Network. So I'm an open book, guys. All right, number two. Even though I don't like when wrestlers use a closed fist, love a finishing maneuver named Woman's Right. I agree on both hands. I didn't mean to say hands and be cheeky there. I agree in both cases, Brian. Number three, the Bianca Belair video was incredible. That is in all caps and bolded and with an exclamation point. And I agree again. Number four, this is the first time I've seen Chris Dijak. I'm impressed. Number five, we know that once WWE announces WrestleMania location and date, indie promoters immediately try to book any bingo hall or armory within a 15-mile area. So, let's say WWE wants to play that game and promotes an event during All In weekend, September 1st, in the Chicagoland area. To raise the stakes, WWE promotes the first ever NXT versus insert brand, either Raw or SmackDown. Here's the card as of today. First of all, before I give you his two possible cards, I don't think WWE would do this because I don't think they would want to look like they were playing into this. Also, WWE is planned out way early as far as where they're going, so that probably won't happen. But I'm playing along because this is fun. He's got two NXT versus Raw cards. The first one, Aleister Black versus Brock Lesnar, Adam Cole versus Seth Rollins, Shayna Baszler versus Nia Jax, and Undisputed Era versus Wyatt and Hardy, that being Matt in this case, obviously. Number two, NXT versus Raw, Aleister Black versus AJ Styles, Adam Cole versus Jeff Hardy, Shayna Baszler versus Carmella, and Undisputed Era versus Bludgeon Brothers. Which event would you want to see live? Thanks, Brian Alston.
So,
I'd kind of like to pick and choose here. I don't know that Black versus Brock would have a lot of, you know, Brock. He's going to kind of go over quick on guys who aren't quite at his level. I think the Black versus Styles match could be crazy good. Adam Cole versus either Rollins or Hardy. Shayna versus Nia or Carmella. Undisputed Era versus either Wyatt and Hardy or Bludgeon Brothers. Go for it, guys. He's just covering all the champions here is what he's doing. So, Tom, what do you think of those cards?
Well, first off, I know WWE did books the Starrcade Revival house show opposite WrestleCade, but WrestleCade also isn't making waves like All In is. That's a completely different beast. So I agree with you. They probably will just try to stay away from it. Regarding the two cards, appealing question, although after the shakeup, and I'm the guy, if you follow me on Twitter, I probably say it way too much, that I'm kind of an apologist for the main roster. I forgive way too many of the shortcomings because I just try to see that they're trying to appeal to all audiences. And each time I'm hating something and my daughter wanders out and she's really into it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is for somebody. Cool. But Raw lately has just been garbage television. And I mean, that's like I try not to be that harsh when I'm talking about WWE, but it's been awful lately. And so across the board, I am way more interested in the NXT versus SmackDown prospect. The Bludgeon Brothers, although I like those guys individually and I like what they did as before they had the Bludgeon Brothers moniker when they were a tag team together. Their feud with the Usos in 2014, I always forget whether it was 2014 or 2015. It was like a 3-month deal and they never managed to win the titles. But those matches were one of the best trilogies of tag team matches I've seen in recent memory. They haven't been great lately, so neither of the tag team matches really do much for me. But other than that, yeah, it's all SmackDown side for me. No disrespect to Seth Rollins. He's one of the people that's, you know, over on the Raw side that, of course, I like. But it's just really hard to like anything in the collective that is Raw right now.
Yeah, and, you know, Brian accidentally wrote NXT versus Raw on both of these. I realize now he meant to do NXT versus SmackDown on the second one. Yeah, and I would go to the SmackDown show as well just because of how strong that is storytelling-wise now, even though I'm sure I would enjoy the hell out of both. And I go to as many live shows as I can. Justin, any comment on that?
I could see some fun in this. I mean, obviously, it's not going to happen. I could see some fun in this, and I would definitely want to see some of these matchups. By the way, this Bludgeon Brothers thing, I just can't get past it. I'm sorry. It is the hokiest, corniest, stupidest thing ever. Like, nobody ever believes that Triple H is actually beating people with his sledgehammer, and at least it's a real sledgehammer.
Yeah, it's the mallets that kill it for me. Like, yeah. I can go as far as the goofy 80s costumes. I can try to stomach the awful entrance theme that does not match their characters at all. But those mallets are awful.
It's like somebody in creative was a big fan of Super Mario Brothers, but thinks it's some obscure Japanese video game that nobody else has ever played before.
Yeah, it's, you know, you see mallets like that on the indies every now and then. There's a guy I saw on the indies called Thunder Frog, and he's got a mallet.
Oh, God,
like
that says it all right there.
It's supposed to be hilarious.
Yeah.
So what Thunder Frog
does... Like a Gorilla Fro thing.
Thunder Frog was in a tag match that I saw. He's a face, and I don't remember who he was with. He was with two evil cops.
Sure, boy.
You know, cops. And so they were... And so he's against two, like, this evil cop team who was, like, doing this entrapment thing where they were, like, trying to plant drugs on the good guys. It was kind of awesome, actually. It was really funny. It was the opening match of this show at First Ave here in Minneapolis.
And they're trying to plant drugs on him during the match?
Oh, yeah. They're trying to plant drugs and then show the referee, and the referee wasn't having it. So they tried to plant drugs on the referee and show the fans after that. But yeah, good stuff, funny stuff. And then Thunder Frog, he's got this huge, it's like Mjolnir, basically, if you you're a Thor guy, or if you, you know, have seen any movie. But so he has this mallet that's outside the ring that he keeps, and at one point it's just the heels in the ring, both kind of stunned, and the referee. And Thunder Frog goes up to the top rope and he grabs his mallet, he jumps into the ring, and he knocks the mallet, and he hits the mallet against the canvas, and all three guys go flying. They sell it like this. It's this massive impact, and it's the funniest crap ever. But what I'm getting to is when I see the Bludgeon Brothers with those mallets.
That's what you think of.
That's what I think of, and I know where WWE is not going for that.
Where does Joey Ryan fit into this story? Because it sounds like it involves Joey Ryan
you
somehow.
You know, Joey Ryan wasn't at this show, but Ethan Page was.
Disappointed.
Colt Cabana was.
They're saying about the name Thunderfrog that the song Thunderstruck started running through my head, but the lyrics being replaced with the lyrics to Jumping Jack Flash. I was bored in a crossfire hurricane.
Oh,
yeah, you got to sound like Brian Johnson.
Yeah, he sounded just like him.
I'm sure I did. Can't wait till I get fired from AC/DC through an email.
All right. So yeah, that's my Thunder Frog story, guys. So there you go.
Yeah, but Bludgeon Brothers, Undisputed Era can, I don't know, we can put him up against the Usos or something, and Shayna Baszler versus Charlotte. There's a match I'd pay money for, not Carmella.
Yeah. Well, and he gave it to all the champions.
Yeah, he did me champion versus champion. But yeah, some of these matchups were you know, it's not, you know, if you're doing, you know, obviously he's just playing by the book, you know, but right. Some of these are matchups like anyone versus Carmella, I would not pay money to see.
Well, the reality is like with Survivor Series, when they were working up to Survivor Series, they knew what they were going to do. They fit the champion to the match they wanted to work.
Of course.
So they took the title off of Jinder and they put it on AJ so we could get Brock AJ, which was obviously the way to go because that was a really good one. So, yeah, that's what they would do.
Because Brock Jinder wasn't going to sell any seats.
That's what they do.
But yeah, it's funny because they actually just highlighted one of the reasons why I can't stand Survivor Series. I can't stand there's a couple pay-per-views I can't stand, and it's because they warp the roster. They warp who the title holders are, or they warp certain feuds because they know they've got this one themed pay-per-view coming up, and I can't stand it.
Yeah,
I was upset about the gender switch because I was I'm still into gender today just because I feel like he's a throwback. He's old school and I dig
that. Don't gender the gender. Oh, he's just saying he can't wrestle.
Well, I'm not.
Or because he's because
I'm not
going to
say
stereotype.
That he's carrying his own matches, but I was upset at the time. But once I saw the Brock AJ match, I was not upset anymore because that was one of the best matches I saw all year.
Yeah, I'm with you on both counts. I actually have been a sort of a gender backer, at least as far as just storylines go. But I thought that he should be in, like, the U.S. title picture. I didn't think he should be a world.
It's funny because back in the day when I used to cover Superstars for The Torch, and Jinder Mahal was a regular on Superstars before he joined 3MB. I was a fan of his work. I think my writers were consistently like, look, his matches are formulaic, but I like the formula enough, and he just needs to learn to put together a match better, but I like the moveset. But then he's come back in his current incarnation. I'm not a fan.
Well, I don't know. I like it fine, but I just don't know. I think he's stuck now. I think he's going to be stuck in that lower mid card for a while unless something changes here. Because it seems like they've done what they can do. What's that?
I can at least call back to my main takeaway from his night when he won the title was, you know what? You can never say that there's no hope for somebody in this company.
Yeah, I got it. Statistically, I can guarantee that Velveteen Dream will be a mess on the main roster.
Oh,
into
yeah.
a singing, dancing, minstrel show.
I'm holding out a whole lot of hope for that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Did I tell you about my date with Kim Kardashian I've got scheduled for next week? She was using an alternate Twitter account when we set it up. I'm sure it was Kim Kardashian.
Oh, yeah. Probably was her. I wouldn't doubt it. You should show up. Definitely show up.
On the ninth hole at 9 p.m. wearing my nicest outfit.
Give me the address, and I'll be there with cameras to capture the whole thing, and it'll be great. So there you go. Justin and Kim Kardashian, that's what you should take away from this episode, guys. Thank you for listening. This has been our show, PWT Talks NXT. We've got our rubber match, Lacey and Kyrie, next week. And otherwise, it seems like we kind of know what our Chicago show is going to be. So I am Kelly Wells.
Yep, you can find got a few weeks to build to it.
Yeah, we still got a couple of weeks. Two more weeks of TV. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. Justin, go ahead.
I am Justin underscore M underscore James at Twitter.
And
I am at TOMSTOUP.
All right. Cheers, everyone.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.